All right, I think we're ready to call the meeting to order. This is an open meeting of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board on Tuesday, November 23rd, 2010. I want to welcome everyone who's here in person and everyone who's listening to the webcast this morning to the meeting. Today, the board will consider recommendations to adopt a strategic plan for 2010 to 2014 and to approve the PCOB's 2011 budget in accordance with Section 109B of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act of 2002. Before we proceed with the agenda, I'll note for the record that all of the board members are present and participating in the meeting this morning. The first order of business before the board today is a staff recommendation to adopt a strategic plan for the fiscal years 2010 to 2014. And to present the staff's recommendations on this agenda item, we'll turn to our Chief Administrative Officer, Darrell Pawley, and our Deputy Chief Administrative Officer, Bill Wiggins. Gentlemen, good morning.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. Bill Wiggins and I are pleased to present for your consideration and approval the PCAOB's strategic plan for the years 2010 through 2014. The plan before you complies with the SEC's budget rule and, as you are aware, is the result of an organization-wide planning effort. In preparing this document, staff carefully considered input from you and your staff and the PCAUB's divisions and offices. We believe the plan aligns closely with the 2011 budget and our current operating environment. I want to thank Bill Wiggins for his hard work, the divisions and offices for their generous assistance, and each of you and your staff for your support and direction throughout the strategic planning process. Bill Wiggins will present an overview of the strategic plan.
Thanks, Darrell. The strategic plan before you today would supersede the previous plan that was approved by you all at this time last year. Overall, the structure of the revised plan is similar to prior years. It includes an introduction, mission statement, vision, core values, discussion of key environmental factors, goals, objectives, initiatives, and performance measures. It also contains, at the end, a brief explanatory overview of the PCOB's annual planning, budgeting, and financial reporting framework. This year's plan differs from the prior version in several regards. It contains an updated mission to reflect enactment of the Dodd-Frank Act. It includes an updated environmental factors discussion that also reflects the new authority under the Dodd-Frank Act, along with an updated Goal 2 related to implementation of our new authorities. And in addition, it reallocates the initiatives and activities that were previously under Goal 4 into other parts of the plan. In particular, with regard to Goal 2, the plan reflects the new authority related to broker-dealers under the Dodd-Frank Act that requires the PCOB to inspect the audits of broker-dealers, whereas the previous goal in last year's plan related to broker-dealers focused solely on registering and receiving annual and special reports from public accounting firms with broker-dealer audit clients. The revised Goal 2 reflects the new authority, in particular by establishing a regulatory and operational infrastructure, analyzing information from external sources, and developing an inspection program to implement the board's new authorities. The plan also reflects changes to the PCAOB's outreach and communications activities. As I said, we've gotten rid of Goal 4, and also we have new initiatives relating to outreach that I'll discuss. The strategic plan continues to include quantifiable performance measures and qualitative indicators to assist the board in ascertaining the PCOB's progress in achieving its mission. We are continually working to refine these measures as we gain experience with them, and we'll continue to do so going forward. At a more general level, as Darrell stated, the strategic plan informs the development of the budget that we will soon take up, and the two processes are closely aligned. In connection with the preparation of the board's budget, we anticipate for 2012, We anticipate keeping this cycle and providing the board with an opportunity to review and revise a further draft of the strategic plan early next year. As part of the cycle, what will happen then is that the board will prepare an outlook letter in March for us to start the process again. As was the case this year, we'll work with the board all of next year to update the plan as necessary. To conclude, the development of a strategic plan is an organization-wide effort, and again, to reiterate Daryl's remarks, we certainly would be remiss if we didn't thank everyone for their assistance. In particular, I want to thank Phoebe Brown, Sam Ross, and Lily Lynn. In addition, I've met with all of you many times on this, and we certainly appreciate your input. So, with that, Mr. Chairman, I formally recommend that the board approve the 2010 to 2014 strategic plan before you today.
Thank you very much. Let me turn to my fellow board members and ask if there are any motions concerning the updated strategic plan.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Yes, Mr. Niemeyer.
I move that the board adopt the PCOB strategic plan for 2010 to 2014 as recommended.
Thank you very much. Is there a second?
I second this, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Gradison. Let me make a couple of comments myself concerning the strategic plan. The SEC's PCOB budget rule, which describes the process by which the commission reviews and approves the board's annual budgets, requires that the board maintain a five-year strategic plan setting forth the board's long-range vision for its operations. Each fall, in conjunction with approving the budget for the coming year, the board reassesses its objectives and how it is seeking to accomplish them. Based on that review, we update the strategic plan. Approving a new blueprint for the coming 5 years in tandem with the annual budget promotes alignment between the plan and the budget and forces the board to think strategically about what it's trying to accomplish with its resources. Those who compare the 2010 to 2014 plan to its predecessor will note some key changes. Last year's plan was organized around five goals. The new version is more streamlined and condensed to four. In brief, those goals are to protect the interests of the investing public in fair and independent audit reports on the financial statements of public companies through effective oversight of public company auditors. Number two, to protect the interests of the investing public in fair and independent audit reports on the financial statements and certain controls of securities broker-dealers through effective oversight of broker-dealer auditors. Third, to inform and educate those who are interested in or affected by our work about the PCOB and its activities. And fourth, to operate the PCOB with careful stewardship over resources. The changes to the plan go beyond the way the board's goals are expressed. I view four differences between this plan and last year's plan as the most important. First, as we've already heard, this year's plan incorporates Congress's decision in the Dodd-Frank Act to broaden the board's responsibilities by giving it new authority over auditors of securities broker-dealers. This added responsibility will require us to expand the PCOB's inspections, enforcement, and standard-setting programs. The strategic plan, beginning with the statement of the board's mission, has been revised to take into account these new challenges. Goal 2 focuses specifically on this area. The objectives and initiatives under that goal provide a framework for accomplishing the new tasks Congress has given the board. Second key difference, we've eliminated what was previously goal 4. That goal related to the coordination of financial reporting and auditing initiatives in the United States and other jurisdictions. The disappearance of old goal 4 does not mean that coordination with other audit oversight bodies and standard setters is no longer important. On the contrary, working with other standard setters and coordinating with our foreign counterparts continue to be central to successful oversight. This effort, however, is best viewed through the lens of the board's basic mission of protecting investor interests in public company and broker-dealer auditing, rather than as something separate. The objectives of old Goal 4 have been folded into initiatives under the other goals. Third, the initiatives under Goal 3, which relates to the board's outreach and education, have been expanded. For the past several years, the board has conducted a series of very successful forums on auditing in the small business environment as outreach to the small business community. However, during the legislative debate leading up to the enactment of Dodd-Frank, there was interest in making sure that the board had open lines of two-way communication with all those affected by its work, particularly small firms. In response, this year's strategic plan reflects an expanded commitment to seek input and to respond to questions and concerns relating to the effect of the PCOB's work on the small business community, including auditors of smaller issuers and broker-dealers and their clients. Fourth, while the environmental factors outlined in the plan are largely unchanged from last year, we've added references to broker-dealer auditing in light of the Dodd-Frank legislation and the pace of accounting standard setting. Rapid changes in accounting standards, especially a shift to more principles-based standards, increase audit challenges, as well as challenges to our inspection program. I want to conclude by emphasizing, as I did last year, that the strategic plan does not in any way constrain future board decision-making. The commission is, of course, in the process of selecting three new board members. These individuals will constitute a new board majority, and they may bring with them new ideas concerning the board's goals, objectives, and initiatives. This plan is intended to be flexible, and nothing in it limits the next board's choices. Further, our strategic planning process is a continual and iterative process. That process will start again in January when the board begins its annual reevaluation of its goals and the formulation of the 2012 budget. Given all the people whose views must be considered, preparing, editing, revising the strategic plan is a labor-intensive and time-consuming process. I especially want to thank Phoebe Brown, my special counsel, Samantha Ross, special counsel to board member Niemeyer, Bill Wiggins, deputy chief administrative officer, and Lily Lynn, senior budget analyst, for their efforts in updating the plan again this year. With that, let me ask if other board members have comments or questions, and let me begin with the moving party, Mr. Niemeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do support this strategic plan, except for the updates that have been described. I do find this strategic plan similar to earlier years, and except for the fact that it's perhaps more streamlined. Nonetheless, I know how much thoughtful effort has gone into the development and refinement of this plan, and I would also like to acknowledge all those that were involved with this effort. Thanks.
Thank you. Let me move to the seconding party, Mr. Gratis.
Oh, what an honor. Thank you. Next year, of course, is going to be a transitional year for the board. Not only have our responsibilities been increased, as already has been mentioned, under the Dodd-Frank Act, but there's also going to be a new majority, board majority in place. I believe that the budget and the strategic plan being approved today will provide a sound basis for the board in meeting the challenges of the transitional year ahead. I particularly want to join with my colleagues in thanking the staff, and there's so many you don't know where to start or end because this has been a huge project. For those who don't follow the budget process very closely, which I guess is most of the world, it began on March with an initial submission on March the 15th of last year. So this is a very thorough process and a budget and a strategic plan that I'm proud to support. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gratison. Mr. Harris.
I'll wait and make my statement for both the strategic plan and the budget.
Okay, thank you. Let me ask you just a couple of things about the plan. And first, we've been... talking for the last 20 minutes about the 2010 to 2014 strategic plan for the PCAOB. It's November 23rd today. 2010 is almost over with. It's a little like, you know, getting the roadmap after you're, you know, pulling into the suburbs of the city that you're driving to. Why is this the 2010 to 2014 strategic plan?
I guess there are really, two responses. The first links up to the statement that that Bill just made, which is the budget process starts in early March, and as part of that, we actually provided you all and the commission a draft of the strategic plan. So these two things have been marching side by side since the spring through now. So again, there the linkages inform our operations in 2010, even though the plan isn't being finalized until today or approved until today. In addition, both the strategic plan and the budget are governed by the approval process set forth in the SEC's budget rule, which actually requires that the strategic plan cover the current year and four succeeding years, and the current year is 2010, so it's basically a requirement.
Yeah, I guess it seems to me that, I mean, you've explained why we have to approve the 2010 plan late in 2010. To me, this really is a plan that looks at the next 5 years, regardless of what the first date on the cover page is, and I think it's better understood that way. Let me ask you a couple things about details. First, under Goal 1, which is the general goal about investor protection with respect to audited financial statements of public companies, there's a new initiative called Organized PCAOB Standards. I don't believe that has been in the plan previously. Can you describe what that is and what its time frame is?
Sure. So during this year, the board asked the Office of the Chief Auditor to conduct research and analysis on potential approaches to organize and codify the board's standards. So that's what's reflected in the plan. My understanding is that it's viewed as a multi-year project, but in 2011, OCA plans to conduct research and present the board with a proposed scope and further refinements and a time frame to the project. So that's as a result of just discussions with OCA.
I do think, I mean, codifying the auditing standards, I guess, is something that I've been interested in for some time, and I think the SEC staff has also taken an interest now in the importance of our codifying the standards. On the other hand, it would be a major and very resource-intensive project, and I think we do have to give thought to how we would balance that project against sort of our day-to-day work in standard setting, which has perhaps a more immediate impact on audit quality. But I do think it's an important initiative. Under Goal 4, which is the goal related to running the PCAOB with careful stewardship over resources, there's a new objective that's described as establishing and maintaining a compliance and risk management program. I wonder if you could describe what's behind that. It's a little unsettling to see that as something coming in new, because I did think we'd been doing that for the past 8 years. But what's behind that that new objective?
I'll address that one, Mr. Chairman. As you indicated, Goal 4 does state that we will operate the PCAOB in a manner that demonstrates careful stewardship. And from the Office of Administration, we believe that an increased emphasis on compliance and risk management is an essential component of accomplishing that objective. You're correct that the functions and the activities that we will be conducting under our Compliance and Risk Management Office are functions that largely we have been performing, but they have been performed throughout the Office of Administration such that there was not the level of coordination that we wanted to see. So in the reorganization of the office, we have created a focal point for ensuring compliance and addressing risk management issues, so that now items such as compliance reviews of laws and regulations, many of them directed toward the labor laws, FLSA, Family Medical Leave Act, other things such as ERISA, complying with our insurance contracts. It goes beyond that to include vendors, vendor management, records management, and things of that nature. This will be a focal point, as I said, in the Office of Administration to ensure that we have coordinated compliance activities and record keeping and reporting to the board. This differs from IOPA in that IOPA is going to be focused on investigations that will focus on waste, fraud, and abuse. In the Office of General Counsel, they're going to be more broadly interested in compliance issues as they relate to the Sarbanes-Oxley Act and the Ethics Code. But ours is focused primarily, at least initially, on Office of Administration issues and on many HR issues and related issues.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I do know this is a general subject that you've put a lot of time and thought into during the last year and a half, 2 years now that you've been in this position. I think particularly in the areas of procurement and human resources compliance. We're a large organization now, and we spend a fair amount of money through contracts and other kinds of procurement activities, and I'm glad that we're devoting attention to it.
Thank you.
A couple of other things. There have been a number of references to the new broker-dealer oversight authority. Are there any performance measures related to that new responsibility?
There is an existing measure that relates to the timely processing of registration applications and requests for withdrawal that now factors in activities related to broker-dealer auditors. Beyond that, there aren't any specific measures at this time. I guess as we gain more experience and as we start the process for next year, that's certainly something that we'll work with staff to consider.
Okay, thank you very much. I don't have anything else. Unless there are other questions or comments about the strategic plan, I think we're ready to vote.
Actually, I've got a question. Could you outline for us the consultative process that you've been through with the SEC in the development, both the strategic plan and the budget?
Sure. Again, going back to the annual cycle that Bill alluded to and I alluded to in my statement, under the budget rule, we're required to submit to the SEC an outlook letter in early March that sets forth changes to the environment or other factors that we think may affect the upcoming budget. In response to that letter, the SEC provides us its feedback formally around April 30th. And between April 30th and the end of July, we work with you all to formulate a preliminary budget, which goes to the Commission. Between the end of July and basically the end of October, we meet with SEC staff and, I should say, frankly, all the divisions and offices meet with SEC staff and have a variety of meetings and go into detail on the budget. So they're intimately involved in understanding why we've put forth the priorities and initiatives and spending levels in the preliminary budget, and they've had the same staff on their side for quite a few years, and I think it works relatively well given their oversight responsibilities.
All right, the motion before the board is to approve the 2010 to 2014 strategic plan. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The motion carries unanimously. Thank you. The second order of business before the board today is a staff recommendation concerning the proposed budget for fiscal year 2011. Under Section 109B of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, the board is required to establish a budget for each fiscal year no later than 1 month prior to the beginning of the fiscal year and to submit it to the Securities and Exchange Commission for approval. The board's fiscal year follows the calendar year, so our deadline for submitting the 2011 budget is November 30th, and we're here today to hopefully approve a budget in order to meet that requirement. I'll turn again to Mr. Pauley and Mr. Wiggins to provide the recommendation with respect to the budget.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The budget request for fiscal year 2011 is $204.4 million. I had intended to describe the process that we went through in arriving at that final number, but Mr. Harris's question precluded that the need for that. So we'll just go directly to Bill's overview of the budget and the questions that I'm sure you'll have for us. But I first want to thank Bill and his team, Yas Masagian and Lily Lynn, for their hard work, and also need to acknowledge the divisions and offices for all of the assistance that they provided, and of course to the board members and to your staff. We thank you very much. So with that, we will just go directly to the overview of the budget.
Thanks, Daryl. As Daryl stated, the proposed budget for 2011 is $204.4 million. This represents a roughly 11.5% increase over the PCAOB's 2010 approved budget of $183.3 million. The budget is based on the strategic plan that was just approved and, again, is organized so that the activities and resource needs of each division and office are directly mapped to the goals and objectives and initiatives in the strategic plan. As in previous years, the largest drivers of the 2011 budget are personnel, which accounts for roughly 72% of our expenses, information technology, which accounts for roughly 7%, and rent, facilities, and travel, which together account for roughly 13%. The 2011 budget assumes a total end-of-year headcount of 717 employees, 81 more than the 2010 budget of 636. The 2011 budget includes 49 positions associated with the development and implementation of a new program to address the PCAOB's expanded authority over broker-dealer auditors. These positions are in the following areas: Division of Registration and Inspections, 41. Office of Research and Analysis, 3. Division of Enforcement and Investigations, 2. Office of General Counsel, 1. Office of OIT and Office of Finance, 1, respectively. In addition, 32 positions are included in the budget for work related to the PCAOB's ongoing oversight of issuer auditors. Half of the 32 positions are in the Division of Registration and Inspections and are to achieve the board's goals and objectives relating to enhancement to the division's documentation approach, a change in the inspection process to identify and analyze root causes of inspections findings to better specify potential quality control defects that firms need to address in remediation, an increase in remediation work, and the increasing complexity of inspections findings in light of financial reporting challenges resulting in large part from the global financial crisis. Overall, the Division of Registration and Inspections is expected to end 2011 with 417 employees, 57 more than budgeted in 2010. The budget also funds 7 additional issuer-related positions for the Division of Enforcement and Investigations to maintain its current workload and address an expected increase in new investigations and litigated and disciplinary proceedings. The Division of Enforcement and Investigations is expected to end 2011 with a total of 60 employees, 9 more than the 2010 budget. The remaining 9 of the 32 issuer-related positions are spread across the organization and include offices such as the Office of International Affairs and Research and Analysis. The 2011 budget includes roughly $24.4 million for IT. Last year, the budgeted amount was 21.7. The 2011 funding level will support several major projects, including completing the inspections information system that supports the collection and maintenance of inspections information across the organization, building a new funding system related to broker-dealers, deploying an enterprise data warehouse that in its first version would provide the Office of Research and Analysis with additional flexibility and functionality to identify, analyze, and share risk analysis information PCOB-wide. And on the administrative side, the IT budget allows for the replacement of PeopleSoft, PCOB's current human resources information system. In addition, the IT budget allows us to cover our recurring steady-state technology costs. Separately, the 2011 budget provides funds for the PCAOB to align its facilities commitments with its headcount projections, including leasing additional space at PCAOB headquarters here in D.C. and several regional offices such as Atlanta and New York. The budget also funds the 5 satellite locations that were previously opened, as well as resources for 2 additional locations that have yet to be determined. The 2011 budget for travel is anticipated to be $11.9 million. This is $1.3 million less than the budget for 2010. The overall reduction in the travel budget is primarily due to a change in the projected mix of domestic and international trips. The PCAOB expects that staff will take roughly 4,700 trips during the year, with inspections with inspections-related trips accounting for roughly 80% of all PCAOB trips. I'm going to skip ahead a little bit. In addition to the budgeted amount, the budget includes an accounting support fee, and that the accounting support fee for this year's budget would be $202.3 million. In 2010, the accounting support fee was $178.1 million. The accounting support fee for issuers and broker-dealers for the first time is estimated to be $187.9 million for issuers and $14.4 million for broker-dealers. Again, this splitting of the accounting support fee is a result of changes to the Dodd-Frank Act, and this is the first time that we've been required to do this. The budget also assumes that the board will continue to have 5 months of operating resources in 2012 in its working capital reserve fund, which is necessary given the timing of when we bill the accounting support fee. Overall, the PCAOB's budget for 2011 is premised on numerous assumptions, including the assumption regarding our ability to hire staff in the competitive market for experienced auditors. In particular, the budget only funds the increase that at this stage it appears feasible for us to recruit next year. Should the PCAOB be able to exceed its hiring projections for the remainder of 2010 and 2011, we will work with the board to seek a increase to the accounting support fee as necessary. However, consistent with the SEC's budget rule, the board would need to submit a formal supplemental budget request to the commission before any such funds could be expended next year. As Darrell said up front, in putting this year's budget together, my staff and I worked very closely with the heads of each division and office, and I certainly would be remiss if I didn't thank them for their hard work and fast turnarounds. Lastly, again, I'd like to thank my team, Yas and Lily and Darrell, and most importantly, each of you for all the time that you've put in formulating the budget before you today. So having provided this overview, Mr. Chairman, I formally recommend that the board approve the 2011 budget.
Thank you, Mr. Wiggins and Mr. Pauley. Let me again ask the board members if there are any motions concerning this matter, concerning the 2011 budget.
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Yes, Mr. Harris.
I move that the board approve its budget for 2011 as recommended and instruct the staff to submit it to the Securities and Exchange Commission for its consideration under Section 109 of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. Is there a second?
Mr. Chairman, I second the motion.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gradison. Let me make some comments about the 2011 budget, and then we'll turn to discussion. As we've heard, the proposed 2011 budget would, if approved by the SEC, authorize the board to spend $204.4 million next year. That would be an increase of about $21.1 million, or 11%, from the 2010 budget. Staffing would increase from 636, projected to be on board at the end of this year, to a projected 717 at the end of 2011. As in past years, the largest non-administrative components of the 2011 budget are inspections and enforcement. The board devotes the bulk of its resources to conducting inspections of the registered public accounting firms, both domestic and foreign, that audit U.S. publicly traded companies. Approximately $91.7 million, or 45% of the 2011 budget, will be used to fund the Division of Inspections and Registration. A considerable portion of the resources of several other units, such as the Office of Research and Analysis, the Office of Information Technology, and the Office of Internal Affairs, directly support the inspections program. With respect to enforcement, about $17.5 million, or 9% of the 2011 budget, would be allocated directly to the Division of Investigations and Enforcement. I want to highlight three primary reasons why the 2011 budget is higher than the 2010 budget. The first and largest driver of the 2011 budget increase is that the board has been directed by Congress to take on substantial new responsibilities. More than half of the 2011 headcount increase, or 49 additional staff, will be devoted to the implementation of the provisions of the Dodd-Frank Act that require the board to inspect, set auditing standards, and apply enforcement resources to the auditors of SEC-registered broker-dealers. There are over 5,400 SEC-registered broker-dealers. In excess of 500 accounting firms audit these entities. While the board may ultimately conclude that auditors of some categories of brokerage firms should be exempted from oversight, creating a program to oversee broker-dealer audits will be a major undertaking and will require significant resources. The second 2011 budget driver relates to inspections methodology. Based in part on recommendations by the commission staff and in part on our own evolving experience, the board has adopted enhanced requirements for performing and documenting inspections work. Implementation of these enhancements began this year, and the new procedures will be fully in effect during 2011. While these changes strengthen the program, they have a significant impact on the resources consumed by each inspection, particularly those of the largest firms. This, in turn, has placed considerable stress on inspections, staffing, and scheduling. The 2011 budget contains 15 positions to increase inspection staffing in light of these factors. A third 2011 budget driver is increasing workload in the enforcement program. The Division of Enforcement has a full docket of investigations, and a significant number of those investigations will likely lead to charges against firms or individual auditors. The Division expects that many of these cases will be litigated, as is already the case. The 2011 budget provides for 7 additional enforcement staff members to handle that workload. The Board also faces significant uncertainties that are not fully reflected in the 2011 budget. First, the budget assumes that the board will conduct 43 non-U.S. inspections in 2011, considerably fewer than the 109 non-U.S. inspections that are required under the board's rules for 2011. The obstacles that we face in conducting required inspections in certain foreign jurisdictions are well known. If, as I very much hope will be the case, we're able to reach agreement with additional foreign oversight authorities, we'll need additional resources to fully fund the foreign inspections program. A second uncertainty relates to our ability to retain and hire the experienced staff of auditing professionals that's essential to the success of our inspections program. The budget envisions a net increase of 56 in the inspection staff. Based on past experience, recruiting 56 additional inspectors, in addition to replacing staff lost through attrition, will severely test our ability to hire in the competitive market for veteran public company and broker-dealer auditors. On the other hand, there are some indications that our recruiting pipeline is opening up and that we may be able to hire more inspectors than previously projected. During the next several months, we should be able to develop a better sense of our 2011 hiring prospects. Because of these uncertainties, the board contemplates asking the SEC to permit us to create a modest contingency reserve. Under that approach, the board would collect somewhat more than its budgeted 2011 spending. In the event that resource needs for which we have not budgeted materialize, the board could then ask the commission, through the vehicle of a supplemental budget request, for authority to tap the reserve. I believe that the concept of a contingency reserve would be particularly appropriate in 2011 in light of the uncertainties currently surrounding the level of our foreign inspections activity. The board intends to assess what the situation is with respect to foreign inspections and with respect to the hiring market early next year, and as appropriate, ask the commission to adjust the 2011 accounting support fee to fund such a reserve. Finally, I want to comment about the way the accounting support fee will be set in 2011. Since the board's inception, pursuant to the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, each year our budget, after approval by the SEC, has been allocated among U.S. public companies in proportion to market capitalization. This year, that will change. In light of the board's new responsibilities to oversee the auditors of broker-dealers, the Dodd-Frank Act provided that the costs of running the PCAOB should be shared by public companies and by SEC-registered securities broker-dealers. To implement that provision, we've made an estimate of the portion of our 2011 costs that will be related to oversight of broker-dealer audits. The costs of the broker-dealer oversight program will be assessed against brokerage firms in proportion to their net capital. The costs associated with oversight of issuer audits will be assessed against public companies in proportion to their market capitalization, as it has been in the past. I want to conclude by thanking all of the staff members that were involved in preparing the 2011 budget. Each office and division plays a role. It's not possible to single out everyone who made a significant contribution. I would, however, like to particularly thank Darrell Pauley, the board's chief administrative officer, for his thoughtful oversight, Bill Wiggins, deputy chief administrative officer, and all of the members of the budget staff, especially Yoss Masagian and Lily Lynn, for the hard work they've put in on the 2011 budget. I would also like to recognize the role of the SEC staff, which has devoted many hours to reviewing and commenting on this budget. I appreciate their help and their support for the board's mission. Let me ask then if other board members have comments, and again, I'll begin with the moving board member, Mr. Harris.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I support the annual budget, and I compliment you for your leadership in developing a strategic plan and budget we are all able to support. Similar to last year's budget, I'm prepared to vote for it with the understanding that it, like the strategic plan, are subject to revisions by our three prospective new board members. While the strategic plan and budget are good faith efforts to address the board's anticipated needs and direction, As you have made clear, it is not our intention to bind new board members to our decisions today. The strategic plan and the budget recognize that the board faces significant new and uncertain challenges in the coming year. These include implementation of the Dodd-Frank Wall Street Reform and Consumer Protection Act, particularly with respect to audits of broker-dealers, the board's efforts to oversee the global network firms, issues related to the board's inability to gain access to inspect certain non-U.S. firms, potential increases in litigation and enforcement referrals, changes in financial accounting and reporting standards, and the continued effects of the global financial crisis. You've outlined the increases in our budget related to inspections, enforcement, research, analysis, and international. These increases reflect, among other things, the continued need to address inspection and enforcement issues raised by the global financial crisis and the challenges to some of our international inspections. Considering our new responsibilities and the ongoing challenges of the financial crisis, I believe the board, working closely with the SEC, has exercised restraint in today's request. For example, staffing levels remain stable for many offices, including that of the chief auditor, communications, information technology, budget, and facilities. Notwithstanding the stable funding for the office of chief auditor, I think it is important to recognize Standard's aggressive agenda in response to the financial crisis, their additional broker-dealer audit oversight responsibilities, and their focus on making the auditor's report more relevant to investors. The strategic plan and budget reflect our continued response to deficiencies in audit areas affected by the global financial crisis. The board issued a report in September summarizing recent inspection observations. Its key finding was that audit practices and the quality control systems need to continue to improve in audit areas made more difficult by the crisis. These include, but are not limited to, fair value measurements, allowances for loan losses, off-balance sheet structures, impairment determinations, revenue recognition, inventory valuation, and income taxes. In addition to examining firms' efforts to tackle audit deficiencies in these areas, the board recognizes the need for firms to identify and address the root causes of these audit quality issues, continue its aggressive standard-setting activity in response to these findings, and further pursue the complex investigations being conducted by our enforcement staff. Audit inspections of 2010 financial statements will include the examination of new and complex accounting and auditing issues. Looking around the corner by identifying emerging audit risks has always been an important element of the PCAOB inspection program. The need for expanded research and analysis has become increasingly apparent as the problems of the global economy have grown more complex and the board's oversight authority has expanded. For these reasons, the 2011 budget reflects increased spending in the Office of Research and Analysis. The benefit of the collection and analysis of data is well recognized. For example, in discussions during consideration of the Dodd-Frank Act to establish an Office of Financial Research at the Treasury Department, Senate Banking Committee Subcommittee Security Chairman Jack Reed expressed the need for the government to, quote, gather and analyze financial data to help prevent, detect, and manage systemic risk in our financial system, close quote. Former SEC Chairman Harvey Pitt has also made the case aggressively for regulators to collect more data and to, quote, analyze the data they collect and disseminate that analysis in real time so that the public and our markets would be fully informed. Both have indicated that better data collection analysis may have helped to prevent the recent economic crisis. The PCAOB's Office of Research and Analysis is designed to do exactly what Senator Reid and Chairman Pitt have suggested, in addition to serving the data analysis needs of all the various boards' offices. Issues affecting PCAOB inspections in the European Union and other jurisdictions such as China and Switzerland present continued challenges in 2011. These matters require careful consideration by the board in close consultation with the SEC. To meet these challenges, today's budget provides for 3 new staff members in the Office of International Affairs. In addition, the board's inspections have shown that audits requiring work in multiple jurisdictions pose a variety of special risks. To understand and evaluate how the firms address these risks, The board must understand the largest firms' global networks, including their governance structures, sustainability, and assurance of network-wide audit quality. For these reasons, the 2011 budget anticipates that the PCAOB will continue to carefully evaluate the global network's impact upon audit quality and methodology, training, and independence programs. In response to a recommendation from the 2008 Treasury Department Advisory Committee on the Auditing Profession, the 2011 budget includes the continued development of a Financial Reporting Fraud Prevention Resource Center. This center will maintain, develop, and disseminate information to share knowledge and raise awareness of the risks of financial reporting fraud. And the budget reflects the immediate needs of our enforcement divisions, of our enforcement division, whose caseload continues to increase. Overall, the strategic plan and 2011 budget being considered today are consistent with my own personal priorities for the board. These include a heightened emphasis on issues that directly affect investors, such as an enhanced remediation process, an emphasis on auditor independence from their clients, and active consideration of the ACAP recommendations. The remediation issue arises because under the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, any audit firm that the PCAOB criticizes for defects in its quality control system has 12 months after the date of the inspection report to address or remediate those deficiencies to the board's satisfaction. If the board is not satisfied that the deficiencies are being addressed, then the quality control deficiencies are made public. I believe that our oversight of firms' remediation will benefit when the PCAOB, working with the firms, improves our evaluations of the underlying root causes of certain perennial audit problems. PCAOB inspections show that some firms have repeated quality control criticisms year after year, and more timely remedial steps must be taken to assure the implementation of appropriate corrective actions. Concerns about auditor independence are not new. As a result of the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, there was a reduction in non-audit services provided by firms to their audit clients. More recently, however, on a global scale, many auditing firms have reportedly begun to acquire or affiliate with non-audit service providers or to aggressively grow their existing non-audit businesses. I believe that it is critically important that the profession not regress or in any way begin to compromise auditor independence. It's essential that the PCAOB continue to monitor aggressively auditor independence to determine if and when board action is necessary. Appreciate that the board is addressing some of the 2008 Treasury ACAP recommendations, such as the establishment of the Fraud Center and the evaluation of the auditor's report. Still, there are other important outstanding recommendations that I would like to see the board pursue. These include improving the transparency of audit firms, monitoring sources of catastrophic risk, requiring the engagement partner's signatures on audit reports, and appointing independent members to serve on audit firm boards. Many of these issues have been dealt with abroad, and I see no compelling reason for us not to address them here in the United States. Finally, since I view the investor community as the primary stakeholder of the PCAOB, I would like to express my appreciation for the board's continued funding of the Investor Advisory Group. I believe that it is critically important for the board not only to provide investors with this opportunity to present their views, but also to address their concerns. In conclusion, I believe the board provides funding to address the key issues facing the board in carrying out its mission. I join you, Mr. Chairman, in acknowledging the contributions of Daryl Pauly, Bill Wiggins, Yasmin Sajan, and Lily Lynn in providing us with a fiscally responsible budget and for their work on the strategic plan. I would also like to acknowledge the SEC's contribution to the development of both of these plans and to commend you, Mr. Chairman, for guiding the development of a strategic plan and a budget that we all can agree is in the best interest of investors.
Thank you very much, Mr. Harris. You seconded the motion, Mr. Grandison. Mr. Niemeyer.
Well, the proposal before us today provides for an increase in the PCAOB's budget for 2011 compared to 2010. I'm comfortable that such an increase is appropriate. Experienced staff, including expert auditors, are our most important asset, both in terms of cost and in terms of what makes us effective. The proposed increase reflects our continued need to ramp up recruiting such staff, which has occurred at a slower pace than optimal, given the employment environment that we have faced since the PCAOB opened its doors. Indeed, our hiring challenges are not new. They have been discussed at every budget meeting since we began. But they have become a critical management problem, especially in our inspections. This is the first budget that does not fully fund those inspections. The reality is, the deeper we get into inspections, the more problems we have found, as demonstrated in the board's most recent report on inspections affected by the financial crisis. Our inspections provide an important protection for investors. If we find problems early enough, we can focus firms on correcting both the individual audits as well as the overall quality control deficiency that allowed the problem. If we don't have sufficient inspection coverage, though, investors face the risk that audit failure will manifest too late to prevent investor harm. The PCOB's budget for 2011 is premised on numerous assumptions related to our ability to hire staff. In particular, the budget only funds the increase that at this stage appears feasible to recruit next year, or at 15 additional inspectors for our inspections of issuer audits. In order to set aside the money to fully fund our inspection program, the PCOB anticipates requesting that the Commission approve an increase in the 2011 accounting support fee. Consistent with the Commission's budget rule, the PCOB would not use the additional funds until the Board has demonstrated that it has overcome its recruiting difficulties, at which time the Board will submit a supplemental budget for the SEC approval. My preference is not to bifurcate this process. We know now we need additional resources to do our inspections, both for both our inspections and domestic program as well as our international inspections. Given the continuing economic crisis both here and abroad, we know the pressures to fudge account financial reporting or give some slack in audits will continue and may even increase. And we know we finally have a strong recruiting pipeline. We are unlikely to know more about any of these matters in January, when we will need to ask to increase our accounting support fee for our contingency reserve. Nevertheless, I appreciate that the board is acknowledging the need for more resources and has laid out a plan to make them available. Given our budget underspends in the past, including this year's substantial underspend because of our hiring problems, I certainly understand the skepticism about our ability to hire what we need. Therefore, while I'm a bit anxious about the effect our hiring challenges may have on our inspections, I do support this proposal. Before I close, I also would want to express my appreciation for our budget office, Bill Wiggins, Yasma Sagian, and Lily Lynn, as well as the oversight of our chief administrative officer, Daryl Pauley, and Phoebe Brown. Phoebe's official title may be special counsel to Dan Gelser, but her contributions to the PCOB since inception have gone well beyond Dan's office and has been a benefit to us all. Thank you.
Here, here.
Maybe I should make a motion on that last point, too. I think we'll get unanimous support for that. Let me ask you a couple questions about the 2011 budget. I'll begin with something Mr. Niemeyer referred to, and I think I've asked this question probably every year for the last 8 years. As I understand it, we will be underspending our 2010 budget by around $16 million, about 9% of the 2010 budget. The current budget, this year's budget, projects an ending year headcount of budgeted ending year headcount of 636. I think we now believe that will be 617 or something in that neighborhood. And I wonder if you could comment on the reasons for underspending in 2010. And then I guess my follow-up question would be, what are the reasons why you don't believe, if it's the case, that we'll underspend our 2011 budget?
Sure. The underspend for 2010 primarily falls into three areas, the first being headcount, which we just started to discuss. The 2010 budget, frankly, was fairly aggressive with regard to our ability to recruit in the first quarter of this year. We've structured the 2011 budget to be less aggressive to reflect our history during this time of year. So that kind of goes toward your next question. But but that's part of the reason for the underspend in hiring. In addition to hiring, we also are going to underspend our travel budget, and I alluded to this in my statement, but we've had a change in the mix of our trips between domestic and international, and there's a fairly substantial price difference per trip. So that's just as a result of changing conditions over the course of the year. And again, as I said in my statement, we've adjusted the assumptions going forward to reflect what we think is likely to be next year's mix.
And just to interrupt for a second, those changing conditions were we haven't conducted as many foreign inspections this year as we.
That's right.
And therefore, we haven't had the expensive foreign trips.
That's right. That's right. The third area is, frankly, difficult to estimate, which is we rely on some expert witnesses and outside consultants to assist us in enforcement matters and in other areas, but in particular with regard to enforcement. It's very hard to anticipate the timing of when those activities will proceed. So it's something we've been aware of for a while and try to keep an eye on. But given what we anticipate next year with regard to a potential increase in litigation and disciplinary proceedings, it's an area where we're going to have to continue to budget. But by and large, the largest amount of the underspend is attributable to headcount. And I think that partially leads into the structure for next year with regard to adjustments to the accounting support fee.
So I appreciate that. I mean, I guess just to repeat something that I think has been said in one form or another a couple of times. Now, the 2011 budget applies a somewhat different philosophy, I suppose, than we have in past years, and it's aimed more at asking for the headcount increase that we think we can actually hire, rather than simply adding up the total needs that we think we might have. Hopefully, that minimizes the risk of this kind of shortfall we've seen in the past. On the other hand, again, as has been discussed, there does seem to be evidence that we may be able to do a better job of hiring next year than our original assumptions projected, and we will take advantage of those opportunities or certainly do everything we can to. Well, let me ask a couple of, I guess you'd call them budget process questions. And first, there was some discussion earlier about the SEC's budget rule and the process by which we come to this budget and the back and forth, again, laid out in their rule with the SEC, which involves them sending us what the rule calls a pass back on October 31. In general terms, how does the $204.4 million in this budget compare to the SEC's pass back figure?
Broadly speaking, it is consistent with the pass back and the dollar amount.
Okay, and on the other element of the process, there's been some discussion already about the possibility of asking the SEC to adjust the accounting support fee so that we would have a reserve to deal with specific contingencies. I mean, can you just describe a little how we would go about doing that, what that process would consist of?
Certainly. And I guess there is some prior precedent for this. What we would do is we would request that the SEC adjust the accounting support fee sometime early next year in advance of when we send bills to issuers requesting an upward adjustment. And subsequent to that, when it was appropriate, we would follow that request with a formal supplemental budget request that would identify the specific dollar amount of resources we need, why it couldn't be delayed until the 2012 following budget, and that would provide a lot of additional detail.
and then they would act upon that. But until such time as they acted on the supplemental budget request, we wouldn't have the authority to expend the funds. So really, it's laid out as a two-step process.
So what would happen if you had step one and not step two? In other words, if the SEC did agree to adjust the support fee to cover some particular contingency or set of contingencies like additional foreign inspections or additional ability to hire, but then as the balance of the year played out, it came to pass that we didn't need or didn't have a basis to seek the money, and we never made the supplemental budget request.
The adjusted amount of the support fee for the contingency would remain unavailable for our use, and at this time next year would be factored into the amount of fees that we would need to assess as part of the 2012 budget.
Let me ask you a couple things about the broker-dealer responsibilities. I think you outlined in your comments the 49 additional positions that are in this budget to address the Dodd-Frank requirement that we oversee the auditors of securities broker-dealers. Do you envision that that's the end of staffing increases to implement that aspect of Dodd-Frank? In other words, does that fully put the program in place?
One of the assumptions in the 2011 budget with regard to broker-dealer auditor oversight is that the Division of Registration Inspections will begin to conduct limited broker-dealer inspections next year. So in essence, the budget reflects a ramp-up in this area. I think as 2011 progresses, collectively the division and you all and us will work to develop a better idea of what the full staffing needs may be in this area and incorporate it into future budgets.
Okay, because I think this is what you just said also. I don't think this is the end. I mean, I don't say that with any great pleasure, but this simply isn't putting in place the full program that Congress has instructed us to put in place with respect to broker-dealer auditors. Some of that may ultimately depend on what the decisions are that are ultimately made as to whether some can be exempted from oversight. I think in your comments you gave the numbers with respect to how the accounting support fee would divide between securities broker-dealers and public companies. Let's say a few words about what the methodology was for determining that allocation and what it'll be going forward.
Certainly. In developing the split of the accounting support fee, working with each division and office, we went out and looked at their budget needs for 2011 and sought to attribute to those to specific activities involved. Again, as I said in my statement, we know the split of the headcount between broker-dealer-related activities and issuer oversight activities. So starting with that headcount and following up with discussions, we got a good sense of how to back into the split of the budget for each division and office. We also included in our calculation other direct funds that were needed to put the program in place, such as building a funding system for broker-dealers and some of the recruiting activities as well. Then we basically blended the percentages that we got from certain divisions and offices and applied a kind of an indirect overhead factors to the other parts of the organization that would be affected, such as rent, facilities, admin, IT, and came up with our split. I think given the limited information we have about the scope and size of the program at this time, in all likelihood, we'll revisit the methodology next year. This is also a methodology that we did discuss with SEC staff.
It's an estimate. It may be a sophisticated estimate or well-grounded estimate, but it's an estimate. I guess my hope would be that in the future we can develop or refine our our essentially our internal time and resource tracking so that we'll be able to allocate the two categories of costs based on actual, as you'd say, empirical evidence about how people are spending their time. But we're not at that point yet, but I think that is on the to-do list for next year. It's also been some reference, I think, to the increase in documentation that supports our inspection program and the additional resource needs that that's imposed on inspections. And I guess I would say that in the 2010 budget, one of the things we did not do a good job of was estimate what the impact of that documentation change would be on the inspection program. Just comment on where we are with that now, and you believe that the 2011 budget will match the resources that we're devoting to inspections better to what we're actually asking the inspection staff to do in the field today.
We went through 2010 documentation with respect to the implementation of the documentation, enhanced documentation for the first time. And as a result of the feedback that we got from the staff in connection with that effort, we realized there was a tremendous stress on the system, stress on the staff, and stress on the system and process that we had for the implementation of the documentation. We, as part of our process monitoring this implementation, we established methodology, training, and detailed processes for it. But in spite of all that, we underestimated significantly the resources that it took to conduct the documentation. So where we're at with respect to 2010 is we're putting together teams to evaluate the results of what occurred in 2010, and particularly directed at evaluating why it is that there was the stress placed on the staff and on the processes, with an eye to reevaluating what we did in 2010 and going forward in 2011 to ensure that the issues that were raised and evaluated are taken care of so that stresses on the system will be reduced going forward. Now, the implications of all this are that they'll take more resources going forward in 2010 to be able to accomplish this objective. And so you can expect that when we get through the evaluation, we'll report back to the board on our results. But the ultimate, the end result of all this is going to be increased pressure on increased expenditures to be able to bring about the changes that are going to be necessary to enhance the implementation of the documentation going forward without the stress.
Well, thanks for that. I do think this is one of the areas, or maybe one of the chief areas, where there's kind of tension between budget for what you think you can hire versus budget for what you need is most on display. And I do think we really have to keep a close handle on how the changes in inspection methodology are affecting the staff and be prepared to make adjustments as we get more information in that area.
Agree.
Just two last things. We've talked a lot about the accounting support fee and the division between issuers and broker-dealers. There is another component to our revenue, which is the annual and special reporting fees. How does the money, and I guess this was the first year that we collected at least this annual reporting fees under that heading. We've had the registration fees for some time. How do those collections impact this budget?
Under the statute, fees collected for registration and annual reporting apply to the subsequent year's budget. So anything collected in 2011 would offset at the margin the cost of 2012. That said, in 2010, we did see an increase, although not significant relative to the other fees, in the amount of registration-related fees. I think it's
I'm not going to get it exact right. It's more than $100,000, and in prior years, I think it was around 40 or 50. So there has been an increase as a result of requirements this year, but it's not substantial relative to the whole.
So I guess the general methodology is that what we collect each year is then, in effect, a reduction in the accounting support fee that the issuers and the broker-dealers have to pay in the following.
That's right.
Just as a final area, then, we spend a considerable portion of our resources on IT. In the budget before us now, I believe it would be $24.4 million. I guess that would be somewhere around 11% of the total budget, 11 or 12%. You might take a minute to describe what the major IT projects are, and in particular, I think you made a reference in your comments to the what we call the data warehouse, the enterprise data warehouse, which would be a major new project in 2011. I guess there is some spending on it in the current year, but you might say a bit more about what that project is and why it's worth the money.
Okay. There we go. All right. Always need a little help.
don't we all?
The Enterprise Data Warehouse project, more than anything else, is designed to help us centralize our information that Aura uses in a structured repository that makes it easier, frankly, for us to use and conduct analyses from. We currently have a system in place, but it's really time, given the magnitude of the information that we collect, just in sheer volume, that we take another look. So the first version of the EDW, as I said earlier, is expected to really focus on Aura and help enhance the quality and the quantity of information that they can do. It really is the 2011 budget for funds version one, which again is Aura specific, but is viewed as being foundational to benefiting other parts of the organization in the future should the board decide to proceed. So it's a replacement of what we currently have that's viewed as necessary given the volume of information we have and frankly just the need to be able to analyze what's already there and additional information that we may get from other sources.
As I understand it, the data warehouse would bring together in one place, well, at least two broad categories of information. Information about public company, each public company's financial reporting. I don't know, what's its restatement history? Who's its external auditor? What issues are in its financial statements? Things, information that is available to the public, perhaps not necessarily in the form that we need to use it in. And then it would add to that information that we generate in our inspection program about each issuer's audit. Who's the engagement partner? Who's the firm is public? Who's the engagement partner? What history have we had in looking at that engagement partner? What history have we had in looking at that audit? What sort of deficiencies might we have identified? And bring that information all together in one place to help us figure out which audits involve risk, most risk, what elements of an audit involve risk, how have we dealt with those risks in the past, and how might we do it in the future. And I think if it works as planned, it'll be a very powerful tool both for our use in our inspection program and I think quite possibly for the SEC's use also, because they really don't have a parallel system but might have some interest in it. So it's I think it's an important project for us, one that involves some cost, maybe involves some risk, but at least from my perspective, the approach to that is to do it in discrete stages rather than one gigantic bet the IT budget approach. I think there's a lot more that could be asked, but I think I'll stop there in terms of the budget. Any other questions or comments about the 2011 budget?
Well, I've got some. I don't have some questions. I've got some, an observation. As I indicated, I think in my statement, I'm a very strong supporter of ORA, and I believe that it's designed. And I've reviewed this with Joe St. Denis, the head of ORA, to serve the functions that were articulated by both Senator Reid in terms of data collection and analysis, and Chairman Pitt. Having said that, throughout the process of the development of the data warehouse, I want to be satisfied that the information will be made public to the maximum extent possible. Bill Gradison is focused on this issue for as long as I can recall. I think it's an extremely important one. And I'm also going to want to make very sure that the data and analysis needs of all the various board offices are served. I'm totally supportive of the first phase. I think there are additional phases, but I wanted to make sure that all the offices are satisfied and the board members are satisfied as well. Mr. Chairman, I think you brought it up a little bit in terms of monitoring various data. I've said it privately before, but I'll say it publicly now, that I think we have to do more in terms of monitoring catastrophic relief risk. And I believe the board has a responsibility to devote more time and resources to understanding the financial condition and the safety and soundness of the firms that we regulate. I don't know whether this is contemplated in ORA, but I'm a very strong, as I say, proponent of the Office of Research and Analysis, but I also want to be satisfied every step of the way in terms of exactly what we're gathering and how it is responsive to the needs of every office at the board. And for the board members themselves. And then I've got a question in terms of the budget, and the question is, does the SEC have any outstanding concerns that you're aware of with respect to the board strategic plan or budget? And then also following up on that, what do you think they will be monitoring most closely next year?
I think in response to the first your first question, the answer is no, again, based on the consultative process, they're fully up to speed and aware, and we've had plenty of discussion. So what will they focus on in particular with regard to the budget next year? I'm not trying to be cute, but it's hard to focus that on just a couple items, I think. Certainly they will be interested in furthering documentation and our non-U.S. inspections activities and the EDW in particular. We spent a lot of time in discussing those items in particular with them. I would expect that would continue, but likewise, they take interest in some of the more operational aspects, and you know they'll want to see our progress in replacing PeopleSoft and some of the other activities that are behind the scenes. So I think it'll be almost everywhere.
I would think that they would certainly have a focus on headcount. We've had many discussions with the SEC staff about headcount, and I think they'll be very interested to see how the remainder of this year and the first part of next year goes. I would also underscore their interest in the Enterprise Data Warehouse. During the budget discussions that we had with them, they had a lot of questions about that concept. And I would add that I think they were very interested, very supportive, as the board has been, of the EDW concept. So I think those are two areas, but I think they will be monitoring our budget performance, particularly as we discuss with them the possibility of the contingency reserve.
I think it's worth mentioning too that we have a quarterly report, which goes into a great deal of detail, which they receive, and the content of it, at least my observation, is the content has been broadened over time as. To reflect the areas of their special interests.
I'd like to think that we have eliminated the element of surprise questions from the SEC, in that through Bill and Yas and Lily's efforts, we stay in pretty close contact with the SEC staff. They're either here or we are there for meetings on a on an ongoing basis. So I think if there are emerging issues that the SEC will have for us, that we'll have plenty of advance warning of those.
And it's my understanding, based upon a representation, I thought a representation made at our first investor advisory group meeting, that they are supportive of the fraud center.
That is my understanding.
Okay, thank you very much. The motion before the board is to approve the proposed 2011 budget and transmit it to the SEC. Call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion carries unanimously, and the 2011 budget is approved. That concludes our agenda for today. I'd like to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving, and the meeting is adjourned.